Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest. Is that the name of this, Midwest Outdoors?
You got it, yeah.
Yeah, I got
it. Very
good. That's not bad for me this hour in the morning.
After a sugar rush.
That's right. Chris Todd brought us Dunkin' Donuts. They've almost all been devoured already.
And you've had most of them.
Yes. I was a hungry little boy. And then also brought you last week, I guess it was, week four, a cookbook from Steve Rinelli.
Yeah, right.
I've been looking forward to getting this thing. I probably won't use it to cook, but I'll sure enjoy reading the deal.
He's got so many stories. And now I haven't seen these two. These two are different than the one I have.
Oh, man.
But what a nice guy. Chris Todd, I mean.
He likes us. How come?
He doesn't know us very well.
Oh. But, thank you, Chris.
Yeah, you're amazing. Very generous.
And they were even Christmas wrapped.
Yeah.
What a thoughtful person. I'd have brought him in a garbage bag and said, here, you know.
We got to take him hunting and fishing.
Oh, no. I don't want to be seen in public with him.
Yeah, we got to draw the line somewhere right there, don't we?
In his parking lot in the dark, it was okay.
I thought he was a stalker when I pulled up, actually.
That voice would be Greg Thompson, our good buddy. Pulled up into the parking lot, and Chris was waiting down there.
We've got so much lined up.
Oh, gosh.
We're going to call out of the world, around the universe. It's already Sunday where we're calling.
Yeah, New Zealand. It's 1:30. Well, it'd be 1 o'clock in the morning right now. Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
That's just so bizarre. But what a fascinating guy. Alan Ballmer, and Greg was the one that came across him, and he's got some, I mean, you want to talk about some fishing ideas or myths that we have. This guy he blows them out of the water.
You know, I mean, and we were talking before we went on the air, it's theory. I mean, there's days that no one can explain it.
Right.
There's days that he can explain it. There's days they bite. There's days they don't bite.
That's why they call it fishing.
You know, when you're a guide, you can't jump in the water and make them bite. You know. It's like when we were guiding duck hunting, can't make them fly that day. Yeah, it's just going to happen when it happens on the deal. But this will give you some input as to make you a better fisherman time we get through with this radio show.
He has done a lot of work with fish digestion, how quick a fish will digest a full meal, how barometric does or does not affect fishing, how colors. Does lure color make a difference? Mm-hmm. He spent a year on a river and tested using one lure and not varying to see if that affected his catch rates. I mean, the guy is out of his mind.
Evidently.
But very interesting fellow. So, yeah, so that's going to be great. Hopefully, maybe here in the 6:15 or 6:30, we'll have him on the air.
Poor fellow.
It's not going to be near enough time, whatever it is.
No.
Poor fellow stayed up all night just to talk to us. That's just crazy. I don't know. Something's wrong with him. A little sad note that I have to pass along, and it was kind of hard on me. Mike Morgan, who we've had on many, many times with Mojo, passed last week. And one of those guys, we would talk long before we'd go on a radio show, and we would talk waterfowl. And the guy was so in tune. He worked for Mojo and produced and edited and hosted shows and did everything. And from a 1 to a 10, he was 11. He's a good person. You know, it isn't so bad about losing people. It's replacing them. You know, and that guy can never, ever be replaced. He was just a wonderful, wonderful person, a true gentleman in the waterfowl industry. I'm going to miss him dearly. And I've learned a very valuable lesson over this, over him passing. All these years, me and him going to get together and go duck hunting. We never did. So it's too late now, but it kind of changed my thinking a lot. I'm going to go find these guys, going to go hunting with them, invite them to my club, whatever I got to do. These guys, we're all getting up there. I'll be 69 here pretty darn quick. And I don't know how many more duck seasons I've got, or anybody does, I guess. But I'm going to miss him so dearly. He was just a class act and a wonderful, wonderful
He wasn't
person.
Very old, was he?
No, I think he was 54, I think it was.
Oh, my gosh, that's just horrible.
Yeah, and just a hoot to interview. So cut into what he was doing. There wasn't a question he didn't have an answer for, you know. He would just, and he'd go into detail about it, you know. And we would talk decoy placement and calling and mojos and, you know, all the stuff that waterfowlers talk. And his knowledge was astronomical. Every time I talked to him, I learned something on the deal. So he'll be sadly, sadly missed.
Well, like you have always said, gas her up and go. Yes. This is no dress rehearsal.
That's right. This is it on the deal. I think we had him on in August.
That's right.
Yeah. And
ahead of the teal season.
Yeah, and I got so much feedback every time I had him on, and I just enjoyed the heck out of him. You know, he was just a wonderful, wonderful person, and great organization he works for, and Chuck Smart and all those guys down there, and Terry Denman. And then, of course, I basically kind of got to know him through Doug Alexander, who makes our Fatal Flasher decoys. And that's how I got hooked up with him. But, boy, the unbelievable. I stood at the SHOT Show with him. It must have been 5, 6, 7 years ago. Stood in the aisle down there. I think we talked for over an hour. And it wasn't enough because he just had so much knowledge. He will be sadly,
sadly
missed. He was just a great human ambassador to the sport. And one of the true gentlemen in the sport. Wow. So gas her up, guide her, might be you next. Your number might be on the wall, you know, on the deal.
Right. Well, let me lighten the mood then. This is a little joke that I ran across. Young man moves from Texas to California and goes to a big department store looking for a job. The manager says, "Do you have any sales experience?" The kid says, "Yeah, I was a salesman back home in Texas." Well, the boss liked the kid, so he gave him the job. He said, "You start tomorrow. Come in after we close, and we'll see how you did." His first day on the job was rough, but he got through it. After the store was locked up, the boss came down. "Well, how many sales you make today?" Kid says, "One." The boss says, "Just one?" "So most of our salespeople average 20 or 30 sales a day. How is it you only made one sale?" He said, the kid said, "Well, I only had one, but it was $101,237.64. The boss says, "What? What'd you sell him?" Kid says, "Well, first I sold him a small fish hook. Then I sold him a medium fish hook. Then I sold him a larger fish hook. Then I sold him a new fishing rod. Then I asked him where he was going to go fishing. He said, down at the coast. So I took him down to the boat department, sold him a Chris Craft, twin-engine Chris Craft. And then he said he didn't think his Honda Civic would pull it, so I took him down to the automotive department, sold him that 4x4 Blazer." The boss said, "A guy came in to buy a fish hook, and you sold him a boat and a truck?" The kid said, "Oh, no. He came in to buy a box of tampons for his wife." I said, "Well, since you're not going to be doing anything this weekend, you might as well go fishing."
Oh, I don't know if that was good or bad. Let me analyze that a little bit. Some things that you ought to know, ladies and gentlemen, get on the MDC, Missouri Department of Conservation website, and they're going to have a whole series of waterfowl workshops around the state of Missouri. I plan on attending at least 2, maybe even 3. I don't know. Depends how the schedule works out. But for all the people that squalled and complained about what they did and the split seasons and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, they will listen. They did change things on a 51% vote. So if you don't like the way things are, or your zone or your split season or whatever's going on in your life as far as waterfowling, these is the time to set, and they put you in little workshops. That was it. The one at Missouri Western, and they put you in little workshops, and you all kind of huddle up and and you design what you want done, and they listen to you. So get involved with this a little bit. Stop complaining. Get involved. The sport's too good for you. You need to get involved. It's just one of those times in your life. You got to stop what you're doing, get a babysitter, whatever you got to do. But you need to attend this workshop. Also, you need to keep your head out of your rear because the elk tags are going to be coming up pretty quick in the state of Missouri. And I think there's rumors running around it could be only five. And one rumor running around is 12 elk tags will be issued.
Wow.
So the odds of you getting one are slim to none, but you can't win if you don't play.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, on the deal. So elk tags will be coming out pretty darn quick. What an honor it would be to have. I'm going to apply and reapply. I don't know if they'll stop you with one application or not, but I'm going to try and try to get an elk tag. I think it'd be the rush in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, right.
To harvest one of those big old bulls. I get my understanding is there are going to be certain areas that are off limits, and but you'll be able to hunt out in the tulies around these areas. So it might be a chance of a lifetime to harvest one of those 365 class. Hmm. Elk.
Too cool.
And they're good eating.
Yeah, they're good the eating. Best.
Speaking of good eating, my partner, Mr. Havercam here, went fishing over in Kansas, and my phone evidently was off the hook, or I guess it don't ring in. I don't understand what happened there.
Did
you?
Too. No,
you didn't get a call either?
I didn't get a call. All I got's a picture of a couple of smiling guys and big crappie in their hands.
Not big crappie, huge crappie.
Well, they did the Jimmy Houston hold it way out type deal.
Oh, yeah, but can you blame them?
No. Yeah.
Where in the world did you catch those crappie?
I can't tell you.
Right here?
Yeah. All of them, most all of them, right? Top lip center. Well, we started off. I met him at Toronto Lake, and I got to tell you, there are so many. I mean, there's literally hundreds of state and county lakes in the state of Kansas.
Unbelievable!
It is unbelievable, and some of these are just beautiful little lakes. We went to Toronto, and we had heard that the lake came up four foot last week. They had over 5 inches of rain there.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that I went fishing with Jeff Williams from Outdoor Brands, and he lives down on Grand Lake. And one thing that he loves to do is look at the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks fishing forecast.
Yes.
And that is really a great resource, and it tells you a lot, gives you a lot of information. And you pick out whatever kind of species of fish that you want to fish for and see how they're rated. And that's what he did. And Toronto is rated as one of the best crappie lakes in the state as far as big crappie. And that's what he was looking for. He wanted to do some big crappie. He does a lot of videos. And so that's where we went. Didn't have anybody that we could talk to find out if the lake had muddied up. We knew that it had gotten high, and we were afraid of that. But we went there anyway. And sure enough, it had muddied up. Too muddy to really bother with fishing, which we didn't. But he talked to one of the guys that manages the lake out there while we were deciding where we were going to fish next. And he says there's not a lot of brush out there, and some of it is because he's a one-man show and doesn't have any help, and that's just typical of a lot of Kansas lakes. But on the other hand, Kansas does so much with a limited budget.
Sure do.
And there's fishing cubes that they put in some lakes, and you can go on the website and find where these are and fish those. But he said a lot of guys, he said, in his opinion, he didn't need a lot of brush in that lake because, and I think that's true of a lot of Kansas lakes, because most fishermen that fished it would just go to the dam and fish for suspended fish along the dam. I'm telling you, they need to put a little more time into putting brush piles out. There are so many cedars and trees laying around the banks on all of the lakes that we saw. It wouldn't take much to pull them down into the water, weight them and put them into the water, because So the next lake we went to was Wilson Lake, and it wasn't very far from Toronto. And we put in there, it's not a very big lake, but there was hardly any brush in there at all. We found one good-looking brush pile. We graphed for an hour, and one good brush pile, and there was tons of fish around it. And we tried to fish it, and we just got a few bites. We kind of, in retrospect, thinking that it was probably a big bunch of bluegill. And this lake was rated very poorly for crappie, so it would make sense. But it was close, so we decided to try it. So then we went down to Elk City Reservoir. That's where we should have started. I'm telling you what. Now, that's almost, I think it's a 4,500-acre lake. It's a big lake.
Yeah, it's huge.
And yeah. Full of snow geese. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's
Don't be telling me that.
But it's the same thing. not a lot of brush. And he'd been there one other time and had already marked some brush piles. And we found a few, but I just can't imagine how good it would be if there was a lot of brush in these lakes. Because the fishing was spectacular. You find any kind of brush at all on these kind of lakes, and the fishing is spectacular. And Jeff has the ultimate setup. He's got two graphs on his console. He's got side imaging going and down imaging, two 2D color imaging. And so as you're trolling, he's looking out side imaging about 120 feet on each side. So you're covering a lot of water. But we didn't begin to fish until we had graphed for an hour. And
scouting.
Yeah.
Scouting.
And then he's got the life scope. But he doesn't have one life scope. He's got two life scopes.
Oh.
He's got one transducer mounted on his trolling motor and one mounted on a pipe that is stationary that looks in front of the boat, which is where you're fishing. So he uses a trolling motor and that transducer to look for fish. And then once he finds them, he marks them. And he's got that spot lock trolling motor. Oh, my gosh. Those are
priceless. Priceless.
Yeah. You just set it and forget it.
It's
just like being anchored, but with your trolling motor. It's so cool. I see we're getting close to the break.
Well, we need to talk about some more of this, but we've got our guest. Maybe we're calling halfway around the world. I don't know if we're going to be able to get him or not, but we're trying. We are brought to you by King City Lumber Company, King City, Missouri, the finest construction company in the United States of America. Did I just say that?
You did. That's...
I don't know. They're awful good.
None better.
None, no better. If you're looking for an outbuilding, maybe a place to put your horsey, a place to put your donkey, your dog, or your boat, or your combine, or whatever.
Or yourself if you get in the doghouse with your wife.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. You could live in there, which I think you probably would be. But anyway, they are the finest master craftsmen, first-rate lumber, master carpenters. They never leave the job until you're happy. And if you're not happy, they're not happy. They will stay with you. I've been in some of their buildings that are 20 years old. Looks like they built last week. Unbelievable. I've been watching them build a building right now. I've never saw construction like that. Those guys are good. Unbelievable. KingCityLumber.com. Go to their website. You'll be on there about 20 minutes. Tell you what, you're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We've got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. By the magic of the telephone, maybe we're going to call to where? Argentina?
New Zealand.
New Zealand. Close enough.
Alan Bulmer. We're trying to get him on the phone as we speak. In the meantime, I got to tell you about, I was at the boat show last week and saw some of the Jackson kayaks that Sportsman's Outfitter and Marine have.
I was going to ask you about that.
They have got the coolest frigging kayak you have ever seen. It looks like a miniature catamaran.
Oh, really?
You don't sit in it. You sit on it. You step onto it. It's got dual pontoons on it, and then a bass seat in the middle of it. So incredibly comfortable. So for you older guys that think you might want to get into kayaking, you've got to go check this thing out. It is just the coolest thing ever. It's got a trolling motor on it, and it's light enough that you can load it yourself by yourself into the back of a pickup truck. It's a pretty good size catamaran or kayak, but. And that just brings me back to this, what I experienced and what I saw there on the Kansas
side.
I was
going to say.
There are literally hundreds of these little city and county lakes, and you get something like that in one of those little catamaran kayaks, you're going to be in hog heaven, man. You're going to have these lakes completely to yourself, and what a great way to go get away from the crowd. Yeah. But check them out at Sportsman's Outfit and Marine, and if you haven't got your boat serviced yet, they do that 32-point check. So if you're not using your boat for the winter, then get over there and get that checked up so that when you get out there in the spring, you're not going to have to worry about any problems out there.
Makes good old common sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, right.
Not too much of that left in America, common sense, is there?
Unfortunately, it's a dying.
You know, like a little lake up here, this Guy Park, it's here north of Platte City. You can't get to part of it, per se. I mean, you can, but it's just tough. But you had a kayak, you'd go right back in there. And there's fish in there. Never saw a lure.
Right.
There's a little lake up by a Belcher Branch. My goodness, you could get clear back in there. There's crappie in there need to be harvested, I'm telling you.
You know, this catamaran-type kayak, I was talking to a rep from Jackson, and I wondered how stable it was. He said he had a 400-pound man step on that and sit down.
Wow.
It's that stable.
Andy Burnham? I shouldn't. Andy, I apologize. He's probably listening. 400 pounds.
Yeah, right.
That's so. A big old boy. You play for the Chiefs?
That I don't know.
Now, since how I brought that up, and I'd like to have your prediction for the game on Sunday.
Well, we win, of course. I'm thinking in the 30 to 20 range.
30 to 20 range. I love your attitude. Would you take Patrick Mahone fishing?
I would be my honor.
You would? Do you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or as our board operator, our temporary board, our operator from Australia called him, Petty.
Patty Mahone. Well, you know, we talk about Kansas a lot here on this radio show.
Mostly hunting.
Yeah, but that is, and my favorite lake, and we talk about it constantly, is Milford, because I like catching those hybrids. Who doesn't like catching hybrids? Because the fight never quits. But you get in these lakes, they got smallmouth. You know, they do so much with so little.
Yes, they do.
It's unbelievable.
Smallmouth, walleye, I mean, you name it. I mean, speaking of Milford, the crappie fishing over there, from what I'm hearing, is about the best it's ever been.
I knew it.
There's
exactly.
A lot of fish to be had out there. But, back to these city and county lakes, you went down there to this Toronto Lake, and you think of Kansas mostly as flat farm ground.
Yeah.
This is gorgeous down there. The hills and the bluffs around this little lake, it is just stunningly beautiful.
Now, Mark, you told me on the phone you were the only boat on the lake. Should that tell you something?
Well, it's probably not going to be now, but I don't know.
it was right at that edge of being miserable.
It was cold. Uh-huh. And then that wind, the wind switched out to the north. And once that happened, and it really started howling, that's such a big, wide open lake, like a lot of the Kansas lakes. Doesn't take much wind, and it was miserable. So we only got to fish for about 3 hours, but we did really good. And we had two fish that were over 2 pounds, but we had 15, 18 fish that were between a pound and three quarters and 2 pounds.
Ooh.
14 and 15-inch fish. They were just giants.
And you're going to cook them up here on the show live next Saturday? Yeah.
I will do that. Actually, I have some I do have some down in my car. I've got a bag. I've got to go cook my mom some crappie for breakfast this morning.
Cool. Yeah. You know how good that would be coming out of that colder water
this time
of year?
Well, they were.
Yeah.
I've already had,
you already had
a couple
some.
Of meals.
So you didn't think of, well, my partner, I'll just bring him something.
Do we have Alan?
Crisis averted.
Crisis averted. We've called halfway around the world.
That's amazing.
Yeah. What the hey? Well, I'm kind of fired up about this guy. You guys got me focused on this guy. He must be special.
He's amazing.
Well, we're going to put him on at 30, I suppose. Is that
we've only
right?
got 4 minutes.
Yeah.
About less than 4 minutes on the deal. So what the hey? So you're hearing crappie fishing in Milford is good.
Yeah, it's just everywhere. All the Kansas lakes are just exceptionally good. One of the best fall winter fishings that we have seen, and it's good. I mean, not only a lot of fish are being caught, but some really quality magnum size crappie are being caught.
This is the blessing for the high water, maybe.
Yep, this is the payback for the people that had the aggravation and not being able to get on a lot of these reservoirs.
One of my favorite lakes, too, is Grand Lake, the Cherokees. Did you get any information out of Jeff?
Yeah, it's been good, but they got a lot of rain down there. And the lake's up and down and up and down. And especially in the winter, you can't have those fluctuations. It just is really tough on the fishing. And that's what they're experiencing down there. It's muddy, and it's up one day and then down a little bit and up again. And so it's a little tough down there right now. And that's, no different than these Kansas lakes, too. There's a lot of places that had anywhere from 5 to 6 inches of rain last week. So I don't think you need to worry about it today. Nobody's going to be out there probably with the wind blowing today.
Yeah.
But that's something to check into, check the water levels and see if it's been up or down the past week. Because if it's come up, it's got muddy and cold water. That's not good.
Hayden's killing the spoonbill.
Well, yeah, that's right. That doesn't matter what the weather
and on
does.
Grand Lake.
Yeah. Well, and that's something you can fish for spoonbill down there all year.
Year round down there. People don't know that. They wait for opening day here in Missouri, and you go down there and massacre, and their quality.
Yeah, he says huge. Hayden, that's Hayden Williams, mm-hmm. Jeff Williams' son.
Yeah.
And he just started a guide service this year. Did he you? Is top-notch.
He is.
He's good. You fished with him, right?
I fished with him. The kid's good.
Yeah.
One of the other things we need to mention real quick, too, the Elk River feeds that reservoir.
Yes.
There's supposed to be some of the best white bass fishing in the United States is right there.
That's exactly right.
And their quality.
Big fish, from what I understand. I haven't done it, but I have heard of people that... Yeah, just swear by it. But it's been a well-kept secret. Those locals don't talk about it at all.
Hmm. Well, we got those three listeners. They might run down there. I don't know. Yeah, that's it is. I've heard that long, long, long time ago.
Well, supposedly Elk City Reservoir itself also has some gigantic white bass in it.
I don't think that reservoir gets much pressure.
Well, from what I've seen, not
well,
in the winter.
Well, you're
anyway.
Different. I mean, you'd be out there at 20 below.
I'm telling you, that live scope is just unfair. We were trolling from one spot to another that he had marked, and it was probably a 500 yards, but we just decided, you know, just troll along, see if we graphed anything. Well, we're seeing a lot of individual fish swimming around, which you can see on the live scope. And so Jeff slowed down, and I wanted to see if I could catch one of these because he said those are crappie. He said there's no doubt that these are crappie, but they were just so scattered.
Yeah.
I doubted it because they were just so scattered and far apart. But they looked like good-sized fish. And sure enough, one came at me, and I dropped my lure down. And you can see your lure. Mm-hmm. You can see your line. And I put that lure right in front of the face of that fish. And as it was swimming to me, it got to my lure. Bam, hit it, and it was a 14-inch crappie.
That'll work.
Out there all by itself. Now, that's a fish you would have never caught any other way.
Today, since you're not going fishing, you need to go to Reed Chevrolet and buy yourself a brand-new Chevy truck.
I do, yes.
Yes, you do. Got 1,700 vehicles up there.
Well, I'm telling you.
On that lot.
We had to
new
do,
and used.
We had to do a bunch of snow removal last week and used my son's truck that he got from Reed.
Isn't that unbelievable?
I'm telling you what. They are the nicest truck.
Yep.
All the bells and whistles are one thing, but it's just a great riding vehicle.
Yep.
I'm just so impressed.
Well, you know, I've talked to so many people who've gone up there and done business with these guys now, and they finally starting to believe. People are understanding, you know. It's a 30-minute drive north of KCI here in St. Joe, Frederick, I-29. Save about $3,000-$4,000. I think that's worth a 30-minute drive. I don't know, you know, unless
you know, that's obviously the biggest deal is the money that you save, but it's just such a pleasant experience also.
Yeah, and such a good inventory. You know, when a lot of dealers can't get inventory, he's got it because I think they think a lot of him, and he sells a lot of merchandise. I can never do this commercial good enough. That's how good. Yep. And I always say the same thing every Saturday. You never sell your truck, they'll help you buy one.
Right.
And exactly what it is. If you don't like the numbers, just tell them, hey, I think we'd do better here on the deal. And they'll go, no, this is it. And it's the end of the deal. Or they'll say, yeah, we're not going to turn more bucks off or whatever in the deal. I've never been around anybody like these guys. Reed, Chevrolet, I-29, Frederick Avenue. You're going to love them. Great people. No commission salesmen. They just help you out. Hey, we're going to take a little break. We got Alan on the phone, huh?
Finally. Yeah, we did.
All right. We'll be right back with you.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm Mark Tobin, along with Waterfowler Hall of Famer and my partner in crime, Mr. Fred Ramsey. And also joining us in studios, my good buddy, Greg Thompson. And joining us on the phone right now from New Zealand, where it is 1:30 in the morning on Sunday, we have Alan Bulmer on the phone. Alan, how are you doing, my friend?
Good morning from New Zealand. I'm going fine.
Wow, thank you so much for staying up or getting up and getting on the phone to talk fishing with us so early in your morning.
Not a problem.
Well, you're an interesting individual. We've got, and if you'll go to our Facebook page, Midwest Outdoors Sports Radio 810, we've got a link to some articles that you have written. And I'm telling you what, just the most fascinating articles that I have ever seen. Anything from fish digestion to does colors make a difference and on and on and on. So many things I want to talk to you about. But let's first start off with something that I think might answer a lot of questions as to why we catch fish one day and why we don't catch fish the next day. And that is, how fast do fish digest a meal? First of all, what got you into wanting to study something like that?
Well, basically, I have a friend in England who fishes a lot for bass and mullet. And he'd noticed that at certain times of the year, they feed very heavily on seaweed fly maggots. And when there's a spring tide, the water flushes in and the maggots get pushed out into the sea. And what he noticed is that on some days, he would only catch mullet. And then the next day, he would only catch bass. And even though the conditions were favourable, and you'd expect to get both species on successive days, he only got one species. So he asked me what I thought it could be, and I suggested it could be potentially digestion. And he's a fisheries biologist, and he said, well, he thought that typically a digestion period for fish like bass and mullet would be about 8 to 12 hours. And so I thought, actually, I don't know whether that's right or it's wrong, so I did a massive search of the literature, and I found a scientific paper in Europe which basically had a mathematical formula that calculated how long it would take for fish to digest prey of various sizes. And it was linked to water temperature. And so what it did is I crunched all the numbers, and I went from that, it said that basically if a fish is in an optimal temperature range, then it will typically take 20 to 63 hours to digest.
Wow. That's insane.
And yeah, and the interesting thing is, though, that if it's a warm water fish and the temperature drops by 5 degrees, then it goes from hours to days.
Wow.
And if it drops another 5 degrees and goes to 10 degrees outside optimal, then it will actually go from hours to weeks.
No way.
Wow.
Now, are these freshwater fish or saltwater fish, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters, because I've kind of tested this out myself, and both in fresh and salt water, when I've had days where I've been catching lots of fish, and generally in freshwater, there'd be a flood event, and after the flood, a lot of insects get washed off, and the fish feed voraciously. And then on those sorts of days, you can catch one fish after another. And what will happen is that they'll eat their fill, if you like, and then the next day, the catch rates will continue to decline. And then it will take 2 or 3 days, maybe longer, depending on the water temperature, for them to actually come back on and start feeding again. And it makes sense intuitively, because, you know, as a scientist, we're always told that, you know, this reaction rates are predetermined. So for argument's sake, if you increase the temperature by 10 degrees, then you'll double the rate at which something happens or occurs, or the speed at which it happens. So this kind of makes sense in relation to how long it takes to digest prey. And there's a whole lot of, in the article that I wrote, there's a whole lot of other things that specifies in terms of the size of the prey and various other things like that.
Wow.
But basically, it's an interesting guide, because it gives you some idea as to, well, if you have a good day one day, then there's no guarantee that you're going to have a good day the next day if you go back out, and all the conditions might be ideal.
You know, that makes sense to me. I've got a dock on a lake here in Missouri, and I've never, in all the years that I have fished, never had a good day two times in a row. I have a good day one day or the other, but never 2 days in a row. And that would mm-hmm. kind of make sense to me. Yes. Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe it's just that they got a belly full. And I'm surprised, though, how long it can take for a fish to digest a meal. That's crazy. Does that vary from species to species? Or I guess there's probably no literature that would...
There's not a lot of literature. Most of the stuff that's been reported is in species like tuna. And, of course, tuna is a fast-moving fish, so their digestion rates are much quicker. So they'll be like 8 to 12 hours. But for most of the other fish that we're commonly encountering, the digestion rates are much slower.
I see. Well, I'm going to change gears here. Apparently, you've kind of instilled a myth that we need a tackle box full of lures to catch fish. Could you tell us a little bit about your experiment of fishing one lure for an entire year and what the data found?
Yep. Well, it started when I, a long time ago, I started to compile a fishing diary. And after about 3 or 4 years, I looked at it and I went through and analysed the data, and it looked like I was getting my best results when I was using less than two lures. And the more lure changes I had, the less fish I actually caught. So based on all of that, I thought, okay, there's only one way to really work this out, and that's just to get one lure and stick with it and use it for 12 months.
Wow.
So I did. I went through the sessions, and all the data is on the sea. You know, it tells you all the numbers and all the rest of it. But essentially, I halved my catch rate. I mean, I got twice as... Whereas before I used to catch a fish every 43 minutes, I now catch them every 23 minutes.
Wow, just using one lure all year.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You think about it, and what happens is that if you've only got one lure and you're using it, you don't have any choice. You can't just change it if things aren't going right or wrong. So then you start to play. So you'll change your cast angles, you'll change your retrieve speeds, you'll count them down differently. You'll start to manipulate all sorts of things to try and catch fish. And when you start doing that, you'll start to get them. And in that process, you do things that people will tell you that you shouldn't do. And so you'll retrieve it in a direction that most people would say doesn't catch fish. But when you're desperate and you've only got one lure, you do that, and sometimes that's enough to get a fish. And basically, by playing... or by manipulating what you're doing, you can actually improve your catch rate. But I think, now I look at this and I think all lure manufacturers don't make lures that are not going to catch fish. The trouble is that we don't spend the time as anglers to learn how to use every one of those lures properly. And so we kind of just switch from one to the other if things aren't going our way. Where in actual fact, we owe it to ourselves to actually learn how to work all of those lures and that you have in your box. I'm not saying just keep one, but learn to work them all, because if you do, then you become really good. And I think that's what the bass anglers and the tournament anglers do in America. They practice, they put a lot of hours in the water, and they learn how to use a certain set of lures, and that's why they're successful.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, that's some dedication right there to use one lure for a whole year to make a study. I mean, you think differently than most of us do, Alan.
Yeah. you have to step back after you read all this. I was reading that yesterday, and analyze how you fished all your life.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you screw up more than you're doing good.
Yeah.
I mean, I always, and you guys do too, I'm fishing. You change baits. You know,
right.
And you just aren't fishing one properly, it sounds to me like, you know.
And speaking of baits, does it make a difference? You did some articles and did some studies on colors, and does the color of a lure make a difference? Can you talk about that a little bit and what you found by experimenting with different colors?
I think in most of what I've written on color, I've looked at it's more about how the colours are viewed underwater and what fish can and can't see. And so, you know, I think this, in New Zealand, there's some really gaudy lures used. Say, for argument's sake, Gulf Nuclear Chicken is a very successful lure. But in actual fact, depending on what depth is being fished at, the colours that are actually being seen by the fish are nothing like that we see above the surface. And there's a whole lot of science behind that. And so the articles that I've written on colour and conditions largely touch on all of that. And there's one article I've wrote about that was based on some research that was done in the UK on commercial mechanical jigging. And so they did a whole lot of work where they were treating the, using different colour lures and certain types of water and they're measuring all the depth. And they also tried their scents in that as well. And in some cases, some of the scents that they were using were, you know, they actually turned the fish off. And, you know, there's some of the scents were successful. But in relation to colour, it really depended on the depth that they were jigging as to which lure was successful. And when you looked at the depths they were working and what the fish would actually see, it all tied in. So basically, if you read the articles, they'll tell you what colours work best at what depths.
Mm.
So you've got to know. I mean, I was listening before I came on to the, what you were talking about with the equipment that you've got to look at fish underwater and where they all are now. I mean, if we've got all this technology that tells us what the depth is and what sort of fish are there and all the rest of it, then all we have to really do is match the colour spectrum to, in relation to the depth they're fishing at, and we should be able to get a lure that, that'll be more visible,
mm-hmm.
more visible to them.
Sounds simple.
Sounds simple, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Around here.
Well, in my single lure experiment, that's quite interesting because I picked a lure that it's a very old-fashioned lure. It's an Abu Tabi, which has been around forever. And basically, I just picked one with a particular colour scheme that I thought would work in both clear and murky water, and it did. And so that's the one I used in the experiment. They had white and red in its all. And it didn't matter what depth I was, you know, working. I mean, I generally work in them and get to about 20 to 30 feet in most of the areas that I'm fishing. So in that, the colours that I used matched the depth that I was fishing at.
We are visiting with scientist Alan Bulmer, and another thing I wanted to talk to you about before we run out of time is barometric pressure and how it affects fish. You know, as far as fishermen are concerned, if you go out and don't have any luck catching fish, one of the first things we blame it on is barometric pressure. Either it's too high or too low, but that's our excuse for not catching fish. What have you found with your experiments as far as how barometric pressure affects fishing?
Well, basically, I was intrigued by this because I started off and I read a book that claimed exactly what you said, that barometric pressure is a key driver of feeding behavior. And when the more I read the book, it was a very compelling read. But basically, to me, it looked like he was fitting his theory to the data that he collected. And it got more and more, as it was going through the book, the rules that were getting put into place are more and more complicated. So I thought, you know, this is kind of like a lot of the things that are written in the angling literature, and that science would say that you have a hypothesis and then you design an experiment to test it. If you look at data and then try and fit it to a theory, then basically you're running the risk of getting confirmation bias. That is, you're only remembering or using the data that fits your theory. And basically, so what I did is I read the book and I thought, you know, I might as well tie this with my single lure experiment. So I purchased a watch that measured barometric pressure. And when I fished over the 12 months, I measured my catch rates and I recorded the barometric pressures. And really and truly, there was no significant difference between
really
the optimum and suboptimal.
It's my excuse.
Interesting, but if you think about that, it actually makes sense because if there's a whole lot of things that I, when I wrote it up, which actually kind of make intuitive sense. Like if the you can't compress water, so the barometric pressure on the surface of the water isn't really affecting the fish that much at all, and you know, the differences in barometric pressure on the surface of the water A fish moving up and down in the pond at about 3 feet will negate any of those. And even if there's waves that have got a 3 foot amplitude, then that wave action across the surface is negating all of the barometric pressure effects as well. And even tidal fluctuation is going to affect negate the effect of the barometric pressure. It's bigger than the pressure difference during the tidal fluctuation is bigger than any barometric pressure change. So kind of when you think about all of those things, I think what people have done is they've said they've linked a barometric pressure change to a change in a weather pattern. There's no, I don't disagree. I actually think that there's a lot to be said for using what's happening in the weather to predict what fish are going to do. But barometric pressure is just one of the things that you can use to do that, and it's a very blunt instrument. It's not really accurate enough to be 100% fair safe.
He's taking away all my excuses.
Yeah.
It does make sense what he's saying.
Right.
You know, a fish 3 foot down in water, barometer probably doesn't mean nothing.
No, so there's more water pressure.
It's so minute, it pressure. Doesn't make any difference on the darn thing. Wow, what a fascinating study.
And as a diver, when I was younger, I used to dive. That's how I got started on all of this. It made sense what I was thinking. But, I'm thinking the whole thing about all of these things is the more you learn, the more you want to have to, you realize that you have to try and find out. But one thing I would say is that just go fishing whenever.
Right.
Yeah.
And because it only takes one fish to make a stunning day.
One quality fish.
If you sit there at home and you go, "Oh no, I can't help it, the barometric pressure's wrong," then you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, true.
Just get out there and enjoy it.
How can people find out more and more about you? Got books out?
We have a link to what is this, Greg?
It's Activist Angler. Is that correct?
No, the website is www.activeanglingnz, that's one word, activeanglingnz.com.
Wow.
And it's posted on our website.
It's got to be fascinating.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
It is.
And there's heaps and heaps of articles. I've written about 180 articles on various things. And so you have to look at all, navigate your way around the website to find them all. But most of the popular ones are up and easy to see as you scroll through it. But I'm always looking for angles to investigate, or I'm working on some new thing that I've found. I mean, some of the most popular articles would be things like hook penetration. I've written an article on hook penetration. So if you're having trouble setting the hook, or you're losing fish during the fight, then if you look at the piece that I wrote on hook penetration, it'll probably explain why, because it's all related to the diameter of the wire. For a given point profile, it's all related to wire diameter.
Well, we're out of time. We're out of radio time, and this is fascinating.
Right. Yeah, Alan.
Alan, you ever get to the States?
Oh, sometimes.
Yeah, come to Kansas City, will you?
Dinner's on us. We'll give you some Kansas City barbecue.
We'll get you some fish to eat, too.
Well, Alan, thanks for being with us. I know it's really early in the morning over there where you are, Sunday morning, that is. So thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it. The time went way too fast, but thank you, Alan Bulmer.
Well, and thank you very much for asking me.
Yep.
All right.
Anytime.
We'll do it again. All right.
Anytime. Man, what a fascinating guest.
Yes, I'm sorry about that phone connection.
Oh, that's okay.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, if you're
in and out,
you can go
bit,
to the Facebook and get the...
That's the thing, yes. Go to Midwest Outdoors Sports Radio 810 WHB and check out the link to that active...
It's on there, Activist Angling or something. Yeah.
But, these guys that are fishing tournaments that are real serious, they probably only need to sit down and read this.
Well, there was, as he said, like Rick Klein, he only fished one bait, didn't he?
Pretty much.
Yeah,
that was fascinating stuff. And I'm shocked to hear that barometric pressure doesn't make much
difference.
Lure
manufacturers don't like this guy.
Yeah, right.
Because they'll sell us everything. You know, I got a tackle box full of stuff I've never used.
Yeah, most of that stuff is designed to catch the fishermen.
That's
yeah,
exactly
absolutely
what
is.
It is. Exactly.
Wow, cool stuff.
Well, that wraps it up for this edition of Midwest Outdoors. Sad moment. My buddy Mike Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're starting going to miss him, ladies and gentlemen. He was a great guest and a great human. So, what the hey. Tell you what, you ain't getting any younger. Go hunting, go fishing, go do something out outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time I see you, I hope we see you in a great outdoors.
Hey, and the next time we talk, I hope we're talking about Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Go Chiefs.
Go Chiefs. So long, everybody.